Zoom recording. Got it. Okay, now we're starting. All right, I think we're good. I still have two more people joining in. Hi, Lakita, welcome. All right, I have everybody muted, but if I can get some thumbs up that you can hear me just fine, that'd be great. Okay, what I'd like to start with, if you've been in my classes before, you can probably guess what we're going to do first, and that is we're going to have a quiz, and I would like you to close all your notes and do your best to fill in the yellow squares first, and then fill in the blue arrows second. And I put blue boxes, but they're really the arrows. And you'll count these up, and there are six boxes, and those boxes represent our six foundation principles from last time. So I really wanted to see the chat, too. I got to try to bring that up. So while y'all are working on that, I'm going to try to bring up the chat function. So I'd like to get chats as we go, because I think that would be helpful. Anyway, so work on this. Everybody work on this at home. Fill in the six boxes. Write them down if you want to be special about that. I think we're ready. Everybody's unmuted. Tell me what goes in this top square here that I'm pointing to here.
Personal infinite God.
Yes, thank you. Two elements of that, really three. One is the existence of God. The second is he's infinite and transcendent and supernatural versus the natural, but also personal, of the same ability to have emotion, communication, and so on. So, yes, that's right. How about the second square here, below the line of the supernatural, but above the line of the natural, the machinery of nature? Who is this? What is that?
And
spiritual man, I heard someone, meaning that above the machinery of nature has free will, really of the same mind and spiritual makeup as God himself, being in God's image, but different from the machinery of nature. What's the third down below then?
Nature.
It is nature, but something special about it.
Fallen world?
Yes, the fallen world. Everybody believes in the reality of the world, the physical world. Some people believe that's all there is. What's very important in the Bible revelation is that it is a world that has been affected by the consequence of man's sin, is accountable and significance in God's sight because his sins have consequences. All right, let's talk about the relationship now. What was the first thing we said about the relationship between the personal infinite God and spiritual man, the fourth foundational principle?
Revelation.
Yes, revelation. But in particular, we had one word before that.
Providential.
Providential. Meaning that it comes in words. It has meaning, and the meaning is separate from whether it's received or accepted or believed, and it has content that can be expressed from God to man, but also from man to man. So that's the idea of propositional revelation. There are other forms of revelation. God could have limited himself only to some kind of emotional thing or something that only was transmitted to an individual in their heart, independent of language, but couldn't be transferred from man to man. But the Bible tells us that's the way God spoke to us because he made man with the ability to perceive language and understand concepts. And what about this maybe more significant way in which the personal infinite God interacts with spiritual man?
Is that Christ?
Yes. In particular, Jesus came, and we could say a lot about that, came in the flesh, came with a redemptive purpose, came to show God in the natural world, show the attributes of God in a way that could be seen in the natural world. And finally, the last thing of the six and the last thing of all. What's the last thing where God actually intervenes in both the world of man and nature?
Judgment.
Universe.
Yes, it's a temporary universe that it ends. And the end, of course, is also includes the judgment, which means that those things about the fallen world and about sinful man are all made right. And there's a kind of a conclusion, and in some ways provides a purpose for the whole picture. All right? This isn't a class on apologetics. I'm not trying to prove any of these things to you, although there are places in the Bible where some of these things, the Bible even reasons that we ought to be able to determine that about God. And we looked at Paul's sermon on Mars Hill where he said, you know, some of your own poets have figured this out, right? For we are his offspring. I think he's saying with just a little bit of thought, you could think, you know, I have something spiritual about me that reflects the Creator who made me, and other things we could argue. But still, we're not trying to prove these things. We're just trying to say, we did look at Bible passages, that this would be the kind of view of the world from beginning to end, the creation of man in God's image all the way to a final judgment, and also from top to bottom, a transcendent, supernatural, but personal God all the way down to the machinery of nature and how man fits in between. What attributes does he share with God? Sorry for this long review. That's just what I do. What attributes does man share with God versus nature?
His spiritual nature.
He has a spiritual nature, and that includes things like free will. It includes things like a proclivity to love, to have emotions, to have purpose, to have a conscience, to believe in right and wrong and act on those things. Those things are characteristic of man as different from the natural or animal world and inanimate world, and he has that in common with God. What does man share with the natural world that he does not share with God? What are those things in common in the lower two areas beneath this curve right here?
Physical body.
He has a physical body and an outward man that decays, and and that partly is the result of participating in a fallen world, and so on. All right, so much for the review. What we didn't get to last time was a quick look at what some alternative worldviews would look like. And I think you can't quite understand the uniqueness and the beauty and the depth of the wisdom of the kind of things the Bible revealed. And these are just six. They don't summarize all of Revelation. That's not my point. But I think there are things that highlight the difference between what a Christian believes and the value systems that a Christian would have and the worldview. So I'd like to quickly go through some of these alternatives. And I just muted everybody, but I think you can unmute yourself if you want to. Personal infinite God, I'm going to unmute again. So if you want to, give me one alternative to the foundation principle of a personal infinite God. Just one alternative, if you didn't believe that.
Chance.
What's that?
Chance, random.
All right. Which is kind of like saying no God, right?
Right.
Whatever is there, and we could argue about whether that's rational or reasonable, but it's an alternative worldview. Exactly right. And so we might say the first one would be something like no God or no supernatural, no cause, no purpose, just randomness in a way without any kind of meaning. And you'll notice that most of these alternatives have a problem with them. Don't explain things about our nature. They leave us somewhat helpless. They leave us in a vacuum of values. And they're kind of difficult that way. Another alternative is that there could be an infinitely powerful God, but he's impersonal. He has no relationship. He just maybe made the world without real any purpose or meaning, no intention to communicate, no interaction with that world once it was done, just an impersonal, powerful God. For example, maybe he just exists in nature and things go along without much guidance or interference from him. The opposite of that would be a personal, but not all-powerful, not infinite, a finite, like the gods in the Roman and Greek pantheon, for example, who were limited in their power, sometimes limited to some region of the earth. They fought each other, often would defeat one another, suggesting they were not all-powerful. They had frailties. They were evil in some cases. They extracted revenge, often beyond what was... I'm just saying in the Greek literature. I'm not saying they really did. But if you read something like the Odyssey, you kind of understand how imperfect the picture of these gods was. And then I think more common in our culture, this fourth alternative, is that God really is just an idea or a concept. I would ask for a show of hands, but there's way too many people. Sorry, I've got to admit some more people. I would ask for a show of hands, but I can't see everybody. But I don't know if you read the Schaefer book or not. I just read it again. I have time to do that. And he suggests in one of the near the end of the book that what happens is in an absence of any meaning or purpose or any kind of context to decide good and evil or to find meaning or even believe that we have freedom at all, whatever freedom is, that people in the modern time, in a kind of a neo-Christian era, they just use words like Jesus and God and so on as abstract ideas. They're just symbols for something, for freedom or for purpose or for goodness or whatever, some kind of abstract idea, and they have no content. And I think that is more likely what most of people today believe, and that is it's just words. And I worry that as Christians, we sometimes may fall into that same danger. Yeah, remember that that song always comes to my mind. I serve a risen Savior who's in the world today. You ask me how I know He lives. How do I know?
In my heart.
He lives in my heart. That's almost content free, right? Is that the reason we know that He lives? Is it just an idea, a feeling? Is that all it is? Well, I'm sorry, not trying to criticize the song. Yes, I am. That last phrase bothers me. It always has. But still, that illustrates that Christians, I think, sometimes think if they just talk about Jesus and they talk about love as abstract, that somehow that's what God is. That isn't the God of the Bible. All right, opposite of man is spiritual is that he's only physical. There's no free will. He's not accountable for his actions. We don't use the term, you know, a guy killed somebody. We don't say he sinned for some reason. In fact, I know that one of the incidents up in Chicago, when a political figure was saying there might be some character problems that might explain some of the murders that happen daily in Chicago. And they got all kinds of grief for saying that. That somehow there was a character problem when people kill people. I don't know. Maybe that's a stretch. But often sin is just seen as an abnormality or some type of a – but obviously not an active will, not a free will. And I could go on. we're just life forms, so they have some spiritual value. But in general, that's difficult. The world has fallen. A lot of different views there. One is that it's perfect, and maybe everything happens for a reason. Don't necessarily know who sets that reason up. There's not any good or bad or better or worse. There's just laws of physics. And I think that's close to what really most people believe today, though they don't live that way. It's very difficult to live consistent with that. But if you ask the philosophers and the scientists, and they would say probably pretty much that it's just what is. And there's natural laws, chemistry, electrical impulses, and so on. The Bible is propositional revelation. What are some alternatives? And by the way, these are four different alternatives to that. This isn't describing one position. But one is God hadn't said anything. And God has been invented, and the Bible is an invention by man. Maybe the Bible is subjective. Maybe it came from God, but really don't go overboard with that. When you read it, it produces a subjective experience different for you than it is for me, and that's what we do with the Bible. It's just determine what it means to us personally. Maybe I flip it open to a random page and read a psalm, and that tells me something for the day. But it's not something to be studied as if it were full of truth to be discovered. Another view is that there's no really written revelation, but somehow miraculously God speaks right into our heart or our minds or somehow. And another is that the Bible may have some truth, but God continues to deliver that through the church. That would be the Roman church's view of things. In fact, the church itself would have precedent over the original text that was revealed by the apostles and prophets before them. Jesus, again, maybe he was only a man, not really from God. Maybe he was talented, inspired in some way. Maybe he was just an allegory, or maybe his message was allegorical, or maybe he was just an idea. And that idea has some value when we think about it, but it's just a symbol without really any content behind it. And finally, the alternatives to the physical universe is the universe is eternal. That'd be an alternative. No beginning, nor end, no purpose. It's just going like a clock that runs and runs. And maybe it'll run down, but still runs down without purpose or conclusion. Another one is that somehow or another we all were reincarnated some way. Or we live on in heaven and hell based on whether we were good or bad somehow or another in life. And finally, of course, all dogs go to heaven. I just put that in there for pet lovers. Maybe that's your worldview about the end of time. I know some people feel strongly about that. Okay, what I would like to do is, and the last point I want to make, and I'm mostly skip this because I think you know it, and that is a Christian worldview will find itself in conflict with the world. Jesus said that would happen in John 15. Men love darkness rather than light because it's a fallen world, and man in that fallen world has a tendency to rebel, not just to sin against God, but actually to rebel against the whole idea that God would somehow or another constrain him with a propositional revelation or with Jesus who tells him what he ought to be or with a judgment that would take away, you know, his opportunity to live forever, maybe on his own merits or whatever. But that's just to be expected. So no surprise there. So here's the foundation principles of, or the review of lesson one. Our worldview determines our responses to events. Here are the six principles. Here are some alternatives. And finally, it will create a conflict in the world. Okay, I'm going to skip over this. We're on lesson two. Isn't that wonderful? I'm going to go back to our t-shirt lady. And the lady, you remember the lady on the airplane from last week, if you were here. And we're going to read it again, just like we did last time. And by the way, t-shirt lady, I have to thank Michaela Gaskins for that name. We were studying this material in the high school class. And she kept, you know, bringing up the t-shirt lady, asking questions and maybe having rebuttals. And I thought that was a kind of a quick summary of the lady with the t-shirt on the airplane. But before we read this, with regard to this lesson, sorry, I've got another person. Welcome, Tamara. Sorry, I didn't notice you were waiting. Welcome to our class. We're going to read this discussion on an airplane again, but I would like for you to answer these questions, and you're going to have to speculate a little bit, but I think, I don't know, raise your hand if you think you're visible. Do you know somebody kind of like the t-shirt lady in your life that holds those kind of values more or less? And I don't mean that. In fact, we talked about this last time. I think most politicians and media people and movie stars and others pretty much have to hold these views that this lady articulates here. I think so. And I think that it's that you might find lots of people who don't, but in general, this is kind of the socially acceptable view. That's my assertion. You don't have to agree with that, but let's just talk about her. So you're going to have to speculate a little bit about what she believes, but I want to ask you these questions before we read it again, and I'd like you to be prepared to answer these after we finish the reading. Does she believe in an absolute, and by that I mean propositional truth, in the disciplines of science and history? In other words, if you ask her a question about the Earth, and was it round or is it square, whatever, you know, would she believe in one answer and not another answer? And if you believe differently, do you think she would call you out on that? She seems like a person who would call you out if she wanted to, you know. But so that's my question. Second question, does she believe that human knowledge is stable and unchanging? Another question. In other words, what we know today will never change. We'll never get smarter as we go. What do you think her religious beliefs might be? Does she believe in God? A God? A sense of God? What do you think? And if you believe differently from her about her religious beliefs, would she call you out and call you wrong? So that's a question. Does she appear to believe in the value? Right? That's a hard word to define, but some things are worthless and some things are worth something, right? Worthy. And some things are good, some things are bad, some things are better, some things are worse, some things are harmful, some things are helpful or helpful, right? And the things I'm talking about are things like preserving the earth, human rights, animal rights, the importance of love and friendship in our life. You see what I'm saying? Would she assess some of those things as good and bad? Would there be values? And if you disagreed with her, would she call you wrong if you believed differently in these areas of values? And finally, I want to ask this one. This is a little bit tricky question, but if there were three sources of truth or knowledge, you say, of knowing something that you offered to her, what would be her order of precedence? That is, this is the most dependable, this is the next most dependable, and this is the least dependable of the three things. Everybody understand that question? So the three choices are these: religious dogma or traditions, would that be a source of truth? If so, how does it rank against the other two? Societal or cultural beliefs and norms, that is what most people believe. What did the society think of, you know, the society today or maybe 50 years ago, but the norms and beliefs of our culture. And finally, personal observation and experience. Which of these would she think was the most important, the second most important, and the third? Does everybody understand those questions? All right, let's read, if I can bring it up. And so here it is. I'm going to bring it up, and we'll read it here. So she says, "You from Atlanta?" And I say, or somebody says, "Yeah." "The bold is one voice, the not bold is the other." "Well, me too. Are you headed out on business?" "Yep, got to be out there till Friday. How about you?" "Oh, I'm meeting my partner out there, and she and I are going to get married and take a few days to celebrate. I really wish we didn't have to travel, though. I'm ashamed that my own state government doesn't make local businesses support our right to the kind of wedding we want to have, since every halfway intelligent person nowadays accepts our right to marry." "Well, I don't claim to be halfway intelligent, but I wouldn't approve of it." You know what I might like to do here? I'm going to interrupt this for just a second. Let me see if I can make this. I'd like to put this in the screen where you can see the questions. Is that going to work?
No. Just
small?
No, that's better.
I'm just trying to leave the questions where you can see them and then read this. Is that going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So think through these questions again. All right. Since every halfway intelligent person nowadays accepts our right to marry. "Well, I don't claim to be halfway intelligent, but I wouldn't approve of it." No kidding. See, that's the problem we're dealing with. It's not really your business to be deciding what's right and wrong for other people and imposing your personal values on them. Well, they're not really my personal values. I believe a thing is right or wrong for everyone, regardless of who believes it or accepts it. That's crazy. Everyone has their own beliefs based on what they've experienced and how they were raised and so on. For example, most people have not had the experience of being naturally attracted to someone of the same sex, although that's changing, I hope. And so there's no way they can understand my feelings and what I've been through. I just want to have the right to make my own choices about what's right for me, just like you do. Well, I don't actually think I have the right to make my own choices about right and wrong. What? I try to follow what the Bible teaches. Religion. I figured that's where you were going. That's so lame to hide behind religion to condemn other people and justify what you personally want to believe. Well, actually, my faith in God leads me to believe things that I personally wouldn't have chosen to believe and do or not do, things that I would never have chosen on my own. See, that's a perfect illustration of why religion is so harmful. Like the radical Islamists and their Sharia law and Catholic Inquisition, religion could be okay if you keep it to yourself, but most religious people invent a set of laws and force other people to follow them and condemn everybody that doesn't believe and act like they do. I'll bet you're a right-wing conservative trying to vote in people that will outlaw abortion and bring back racism and homophobia. Well, no, I don't think government can make much difference in any way that matters. So you're not politically active? Not really. Look, I don't think what you believe would improve things if other people believed it too, but you must think so. How do you think you'll ever improve society or the human race or protect the animals or the planet if you just sit back and don't get involved? Not that I want you to, of course. I mean, think of the progress our country has made in the last 200 years. Slavery abolished, segregation ended, women able to vote, the end of sexual repression, gender equality. You must be aware that most popular religions are making the same progress, like including women and gay people in the clergy. Well, yes, and those religious groups are wrong to do that. You don't have women priests in your church? Well, not in the way you're thinking. We don't have women in any public leadership roles, but because we just follow the Bible. Whoa, you are really lost in the past. You probably don't accept evolution or the round earth theory either, do you? I don't mean to be rude, but people that believe like you have always been a great barrier to progress. Do you ever consider changing with the times? Do you know how long it's been since what you believed was popular? Actually, I don't think what I believe was ever popular, and it doesn't change. So you believe stuff that was never widely accepted, it's against science, and it's stuff that you don't even understand or agree with personally yourself. And you think everyone should believe just like you do? Okay, let's look at these questions now again and see if you can, what do I mean to do that? Let's go through these questions. Do you think this? Oh, sorry, I'm going to unmute everybody so we can hear lots of rustling and dogs barking and stuff if you want, or you can mute yourself. Does she believe in absolute propositional truth in the disciplines of science and history? Yes, this is a yes or no question. If you want to do this or that, that would be great. If I could bring up the mute. Okay, I see two thumbs up. Anybody go thumbs down on that? Yeah, Danny. Yeah, good. Geneva says up. Nate, what do you think? Yeah. So she does. In fact, she argues, doesn't she, about history and the progress of history, about the fact that the earth is round. And if you disagreed with her, she would call you out on that, don't you think? Don't you think she would say, no, that if you said that's not what happened in history, she'd probably argue with you on that, right? Even about the significance of some of the events and so on. On the other hand, or maybe along with that, do you think she believes that human knowledge is stable and unchanging? Did you sense that? Okay, I see some back and forths here. Would somebody maybe elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, she says, look what's happened in the last 200 years.
Right. So if you could rewind time and ask her, well, how were things 200 years ago? She would say, well, there were some problems with that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's because people weren't thinking right, and we're thinking better today. I wonder if we ask her, what do you think will happen 200 years from now about what we're thinking today? But we won't go there for now. But you would have to admit, she would have to admit that there are limitations on what humans think, even those things that she thinks are propositional and would argue with you about, okay?
Now, Marty, she's focused on the United States and not the world and not the beginning of time. She's just focused on the U.S.
Yeah, but that is the culture we live in, I think, and really probably what informs. More frighteningly, and I noticed this in reading Schaefer, of course, he's writing a book in the 60s when I was a kid, and he's saying, I'm so concerned about these new kids coming in. And, you know, and that was me. Of course. Anyway, but I still think it's true, and that is our children are being educated by a culture that holds different worldview, and I'm trying to illustrate that with this t-shirt. All right, here's another question. What do you think her religious beliefs might be? Over.
God wants me to be happy.
Yeah.
Okay. She's spiritual. Wait, Loretta, what now?
She's spiritual.
Be spiritual. Do you think she has a spiritual side to her?
That's what people say. I'm spiritual. I don't know if I believe in God or if there is one, but I'm spiritual.
What does that mean?
That's a good question.
That's a good point. It's kind of content free, or it can be, right?
Right.
It means I meditate, perhaps. It means my brain goes into a non-physical state. I don't know. What other ideas? What do you think her religious beliefs might be?
But
then
wind blows.
Yeah. Sorry, what's right for her?
Okay.
What's right
but
for
there
her?
Is a right and wrong. She would say that, right?
Yeah.
But she does want to get married, which surprised me, because unless she's doing it for other reasons.
You mean like tax reasons or something? Yeah. So let's think about that. That's an interesting point, Paula. In general, the argument that you hear from the gay community, which I think to some extent is a kind of a way to make it more popular, but she wants to make a commitment, right? She wants to, is there some value in having a committed relationship in her mind? Is that a good thing? It's virtuous, right? Here's a friendship. Is friendship good? Is romance good? Is dedication and sacrifice to another person good? And all of that might be involved in her relationship. So there's something there. Maybe that's what Loretta meant by saying spiritual. There's some sense of, you know, something good and bad. I don't know. Other ideas? Just, we're making this up because she didn't get into her theology much.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, but Alberta, go ahead.
Yeah. I think she has some sense of knowing that there is someone higher. She's with that particular being as long as it does not interfere with her choice, and she thinks that she doesn't have to do what somebody else says. She thinks she is the source of what she should do.
That's a wonderful comment. Because, you know, here's now I'm going to slip into the Bible mode for a second here. Is it possible that man chafes against the restrictions that God places on him like you can't eat of the tree in the middle of the garden. You just can't do that. And one reaction to that is just to disobey, right? Just go, I'm doing it. I don't care what you say, I'm doing it, in an act of rebellion. But another reaction is to say, I just don't hear you. I don't think you're there, right? But when you do that, you put yourself in charge. And Schaefer talks about that, leaving the upper story empty. And you want to fill it with something, some sense of value, some sense of good, and so often some content-free words are placed there, things like love or commitment or spirituality, Loretta, good one. You know, don't know what that means, but it gives me some sense that I'm more than just in the machinery. I'm not trapped in the natural, you know, chemistry of the world. I have a free will, and I can act somehow, even if it's irrationally, apart from the deterministic system. Sorry, I'm ranting. Okay, but I will ask this question about her religious belief. Do you think she'd call you wrong if you believed differently from her religious beliefs?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So if I said, well, the God I believe in is really pervasive throughout nature, and I believe that I'll be reincarnated in some different form in another life, do you think she would call you wrong for saying that?
No, I do not think so, because at one point she says that the religions are okay as long as you keep it to yourself.
Is that Michaela?
Yes, it is.
That's exactly right. You know, she really looks to me like she's all in favor of religion as long as what?
As long as it doesn't bother her.
Yeah, but how? You know, you don't push it on her.
Yeah.
Or, and if it's adapting to the new norms.
Yeah, but don't get in my way. You have your space. I have my space. You see how different that is from a discussion of whether the earth is round or not? I mean, she probably, you know, you see what I'm getting at here. And so when we talked last week about this unified field of knowledge, the idea that comes out of the Bible truth, and we'll talk about that if I can ever get through the introduction here, is that knowledge of God and a knowledge of God's will is of the same process of learning and knowing and presenting in words as anything, any other kinds of facts are. As opposed to, I think, the popular view, which I think the T-shirt lady, now I can give credit to Michaela, you know, that she holds, which is everybody in the spiritual realm, whatever Loretta spiritual means, in the religious realm, it's just irrational. And you believe what you want to, and I can't justify it except by my own feelings, and I can't argue with you about it because it's not propositional, right? And so the answer to question 2A, everybody kind of said no because you think she objects to everything. But in the area of religion, she doesn't really think there's any objective truth. And whatever anybody believes is good as anybody else, as long as you don't interfere with my freedom, right? Don't get on my case about anything.
She's probably in the church of her choice.
That's right, if any. Yeah, that's right. And by the way, my battery's running low.
Oh.
I'm good. I got my charger plugged in there. I thought I was feeling kind of tired, you know, but now I'm feeling a lot better. Well, I don't know if I have time to go into this or not, but do you just think there's some, well, no, I'm not going to go into it. There's something self-inconsistent about what she just believes, right? And that is.
And Marty, one thing on that, I wonder if she's kind of upset with religion because of all the past things she mentions, the Inquisition, and, you know, she's using that as a way to justify.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Jack. And I think what one thing she would say would be that's an example of religion abused, used the wrong way, as opposed to just helping me spiritually when I'm struggling or something like that, giving me a sense of peace and tragedy or whatever people use religion for. But it's an illustration, too, of when somebody imposes their belief on somebody else. But you understand that believing that there's no truth is a self-inconsistent thing. So she says, when I say no, I think she says to me, you're wrong if you believe that, you know, everything isn't right. Well, then that's kind of like self-inconsistent. I didn't explain it very well, but you understand, you've heard that argument before. Here's my question now. Does she appear to believe in some values? That is, some things are good, bad, worthy, worthless, and so on. Yeah. A lot. In fact, quite a few. The saving the earth and animals and human rights and the right to love and friendship and commitment and all of that, right to marriage, and, to force other people to support her marriage and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's odd to me that, well, anyway, so that, yes. And would she call you out if you thought she didn't have a right to be married to this other woman?
Yes.
For sure. Yeah. Even though that's a moral choice, it's not really related to the facts of nature or history. That's an interesting point. How do those moral values have such a high emphasis? And I think she would say the same thing about if you didn't believe that people should love and all that. You know, I thought about a completely naturalistic view of this COVID-19 virus. And you know that if we're thinking about, I don't know what value you want to place, the survival of the human race, the better thing to do, I think, would just be to let all the weak and sickly people who have pre-existing medical conditions go ahead and just die. You know what I mean? Well, that would purge the population of those weaker people that really are probably not nearly as productive as all the people who remain. And you know what else? The people that survive, guess what? They'd be immune to the virus, and we wouldn't have to worry about vaccines and a bunch of other stuff. What do y'all think about that plan?
Darwin would agree with you.
Exactly. And that's what exactly what a Darwinistic view ought to say. But, boy, that's not what the media is saying, even though right after that there's a story on some new discovery related to evolution, right? And the virus itself illustrates somehow or another that evolution is the way we all got here. So, anyway, enough of that. Sorry for that excursion. And then, in her mind, what would be the order of a source precedent in establishing truth? Another way to think of this question is, if two things disagreed, which would you accept before the other? What do you think? What's the first, most important source of knowledge and truth in the T-shirt ladies?
I think B.
Yes, exactly. I think that's right. And you can see that in her language when she talks about other people who haven't had my experiences and my right to do this or that and so on. What would be the second most important source?
C.
Well, C was already taken. Sorry. Yes.
B.
Do you notice that she argues about whether churches should do something or another, that all of culture has already pretty well accepted that? And these things about rights that have been all the progress made. So there is some value, some good things happening in society, especially in a democratic society where everybody's me gets a vote somehow or another, and then we can arrive at a better truth that way. Although she mentions inquisitions and other bad things, so clearly that's not as important as what I personally want to believe. And if the state doesn't make laws that support my right to marry, well, then I just still do what I think is right, and the state just has to get their act together. But it's still important as a source of truth. And then finally, what would be the third? This is not a hard question. There's only one left, which would be?
A.
Yeah. Religious dogma, Sharia law, traditions, and so on. And one of the problems is, of course, they don't change and evolve with the times like human knowledge does, although we should think about whether that's a recommendation for it or not. But in any case, religious dogmas have a tendency to be sterile, stable, and also take away the individual's freedom to make choices on their own. Thank you for that review of the T-shirt lady. I hope it's been helpful. So here's our review again. But I just want to think about the ways in which we can learn truth in this chart right here. And I'm going to mute everybody again. And you can unmute if you want to say something. All right. So here's our story. So the upper story, remember, is the supernatural and then the natural. And then over here is the spiritual. And then over here is the natural, or the machinery, so to speak. In our worldview, can I learn from God? I mean, that was part one of ours, the propositional revelation. Remember that? So that was one arrow. That I can learn something from God, which in our worldview would not be a bad place to learn from, given the eternal and supernatural and other things, nature of God. Can I learn from other men? A little bit like the T-shirt lady. Yeah. And I might even learn things that per se is not necessarily said exactly word for word from God, but there could be advice that works for now and And there may be scientists that have discovered things that mathematics that I don't understand at all. But boy, the device they invented seems to work, and I can benefit from that, and maybe even learn the math and science that they used to do that. So, and then from the world, can I learn from the world as well? From observing nature, I noticed an apple falls, and I wonder if other fruit fall from the tree. It turns out everything falls. Well, turns out everything's attracted to everything else. And if you think hard enough about it, maybe planets are attracted to suns, and maybe there's some equations. And so I could learn from the world itself. So that's a kind of a picture of some possible sources of truth, certainly from God, certainly from other men, education, advice, history, other things, and then from my own observations of the world. Are those evil, learning from other men? No, learning from nature? No, we're going to see that's not. But we also want to understand really what how we should view as Christians learning in general, but knowledge and truth as it's discovered by us in terms of the Bible worldview. Okay, so we're going to start in the lesson. Now, what I'm going to do is these numbers down the left, number one, correspond to number one in the lesson material. So I won't necessarily look at all the lessons, but here in the lesson material, number one, these verses right here, I'm going to go through the same set of numbers, and I'm going to do it on the slide. So if you want to fill in your lesson material or follow along, that's kind of where we're headed. All right. The first thing I'll start out by saying is that the fear of God is the foundation of man's knowledge. That's what the Bible says. But what does that mean? What does that mean? I believe in God, and maybe I'm even fearfully respectful of him. How does that help me know anything? What does that mean? And you know the verse, I think. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of knowledge. Interesting that it doesn't say, but the lack of the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of foolishness, although that probably would work. But the couplet here in the proverb is that the foolish despises wisdom and instruction. Interesting. It almost seems like that the fool would reject not only the revelation from God, but other sources as well. And then Proverbs 9 says the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. What's that mean? Sorry, Clifford, I got to let him back in. I don't hear any answers. You can unmute yourself. Danny, are you about to say something?
Yeah. So a healthy respect or fear of God, the fact that there's so little that we can know about him without with what he reveals to us, causes us to yearn to want to know more about this being that is really beyond our own understanding.
Yeah, so clearly you can't figure much about God out, his eternal power and divinity, I think, from Romans 1. You could know that, but he reveals more about his nature. Let's look at these sources of truth for a minute and think about that. As I learned from God, what that says is that there's kind of a precedence over all other sources. If God says something, I probably should accept that before I take advice from my neighbor, right? Or even my most trusted advisor, or a scientist, or somebody else, and certainly over my own experience in investigating nature. So that's one thing. I think a second point here is that as I accept advice from other men, don't you think that if I fear Jehovah, that becomes a filter then for what I accept as advice from them? Is this consistent with what I know about the nature of God, the nature of man, the nature of the world, his moral instructions and other things? You see that? It becomes a kind of a filter or a guide, a comparison, right? And with regard to the world, I think there's an interesting point that the modern scientists, to use Schaefer's term, not the modern, but the modern scientists, that started with guys like, Sir Isaac Newton and others, the reason they started to investigate the natural world in the Renaissance was that they believed God kind of made it orderly. And he made our minds to be compatible with the laws of nature so I could begin to write equations and describe the natural world. And it was orderly because it came from the mind of God. And so there was a reason to look into it and not just invent demons to say, well, that's what thunderstorms are all about. That's why apples fall from trees. And they might not tomorrow, by the way, because, who holds the laws in order, right? And also because there's an overarching set of values. And I think that's important because as you invent or discover things like nuclear energy or something, there are particular values on how it ought to be used. For example, that govern what I use it for and what I do with it. Remembering I'm in a fallen world, and it is possible to do bad things with good information or with good discoveries and so on. So as I look at the natural world, I'm motivated as a scientist because I believe it's orderly and made by the mind of God. Einstein talked about his, I think, general relativity, saying he's kind of trying to look behind and almost into the mind of God in the way time and space are related. Now, I don't necessarily believe that. I'm just saying that as a scientist begins to look at the beauty of nature, it's hard not to see that there was a huge design behind it. And I expect to find that. If I could tell a story, when I was in graduate school, a professor in the School of Philosophy challenged one of my physics professors, who was the head of the mechanical engineering department, to a debate. And his debate was whether there was any basis for studying or believing that the laws of science were consistent. And, of course, he had the advantage from the outset because this professor was not going to say God made the world and he holds everything, you know, consistently. And so he just said, prove to me that the laws of physics that you study every day will be the same tomorrow morning when we wake up. Prove that to me. And, of course, the guy should never have accepted the debate. He wasn't much really of a discussed debater. But he also had no spiritual basis to argue any of that, really. And the best he could come up with is he says, well, I can't think of a better choice to make than just to assume it's going to be the same tomorrow. And so I'm going to keep studying it. That's all he could really say. But as a Christian, you have an idea that it will be the same and that there are laws that you can discover because God made my mind as well as the laws, and he might have made them compatible for me to understand. Turns out the Bible suggests that as well. All right, that was a long time spent on number one. But does everybody understand that the fear of Jehovah does form a kind of a filter and a foundation and an overarching value system that goes into my study of the world and my taking of advice from other men? Has everybody got that? So that's, I think, how the fear of Jehovah is the foundation of man's knowledge, not to mention the original source of the best information, right? And the other thing that this is real important, and you can see in the T-shirt lady's thinking, she does not believe this, and that is wisdom or truth from God includes both theological and practical everyday applications. I'll just look at a text on that. You look at Proverbs 3, and you find in the book of Proverbs, here's a bunch of wisdom that's coming, let's just say, from God, and the father is teaching it to his son. Are there spiritual lessons implied in here? Look at some of the blue underlines there. Look at this text in here, right? And he's going to help you get along with God, the Lord's discipline, and trusting the Lord, faithful in that. Don't be wise in your own. Shun evil. These are moral decisions. But you see that the rest of it is you'll have long life and prosperity. You'll have a healthy body. Your barns will be full and your vats will brim and overflow. You see, those are one's a pragmatic, physical success in the natural world kind of thing. The other is moral purity and acceptability with God and wisdom in God's sight. And they're right there in the same proverb. It's all part of the same learning and wisdom. You see, it's all the same fabric. And so the idea that somehow religious truth and pragmatic, social, personal truth somehow are incompatible, that's really not the Bible picture of things. And that's why we say it's a propositional revelation. It has meaning and can be communicated. A third point, which is pretty clear, but it takes some humility to swallow it, and that is that man cannot attain to the breadth and depth of God's knowledge. And I think that fact alone, and recognizing it, is one of the things that keeps modern man from just embracing a personal, supernatural, infinite personal God. It's because it's just too hard to think of someone that much greater than me. That's what I think. That's just a personal opinion. But so there's so many passages in, you know, Job 28, I think we'll look at in just a minute. But Isaiah 40, it has such power in the poetry. Who's measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, measured heaven with a span, and calculated the dust of the earth in a measure, weighed the mountains and scales, the hills in balance? Who directed the Spirit of the Lord? Was it as his counselor taught him? With whom did he take counsel, and who instructed him and taught him in the path of justice? Who taught him knowledge and showed him the way of understanding? We won't read the rest of it, but you see the point is that man is limited. And so when God speaks, it's not surprising at all that without those limitations in time, in height, from the heavens all the way down to the lowest part of the ocean, in scale, the cosmos down to the hairs of our head, in all of those areas, we're just limited in how long we live. We can only go one direction through time, right? We can only go from past to the future. God exists independent of that sequence. So, and we can't see very far back or very far into the future either. So with those limitations, it's really not surprising and ought to be accepted. We can't attain the breadth and depth of God's knowledge. He knows things we don't, and we even couldn't know because we didn't observe them. The creation comes to mind, the fall, all of the things that we learn about history just as a start. His knowledge spans and unifies the natural, the historical, and spiritual truth. They're all related. And therefore, his knowledge is more accurate and extensive than man. It takes a humility to believe that. And so the idea of an infinite personal God is the heart of the wisdom. That's what the Proverbs said, the beginning of knowledge. All right, question 4 in the lesson sheet. Here's a wonderful thing, is that God's revealed truth does not vary with time or circumstance. Think about the t-shirt lady. Do you think remember, her primary source was her own experience. Do you think that ever changes? Do you think she's ever changed her mind in her life based on what she's experienced, right, and what has happened to her? She said that. That's how she came to her conclusion. And in 10 years from now, will it be different, having experienced other things, right? And same thing with society. But when you look at God's revealed truth, it's invariant. Now, it gets more extensive as time goes by. More revelation has given us more information about what God's plan was, but nothing that came before has changed. Simple verses on that. Peter quoting, I think, from Isaiah, the word of God, which lives and abides forever, all flesh is as grass, all the glory of man is the flower. The grass withers and the flower falls away, but the word of the Lord endures forever. There's a sense of unchangeableness about God, who is the same yesterday and today and tomorrow. So that's it. I think we understand that point. I just think we should see it in contrast to the other sources of truth that people depend on in our culture. And I would say, kind of related to that, that much of what God has revealed to us, we wouldn't know. We would have no idea about unless it was revealed to us by revelation. What a wonderful thing. That means it's bigger than what science could determine, right? I can't measure it, but it's revealed in a sense that's not only absolute truth, but something I could never discover by experimentation. 1 Corinthians 2 comes to mind. We speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the ages for our glory, which none of the rulers of this age knew, for had they known, they would have crucified the Lord of glory. But as written, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. God has revealed them to us through his Spirit. There was no way to know the plan of salvation, the wisdom that came in the revelation of Jesus, without God explaining that to us, and the consequences of sin, and so on. And I think it sometimes is an accusation, and I think in the lesson I quoted C.S. Lewis, I might read it. It's a common reproach against Christianity that its dogmas are unchanging while human knowledge is in continual growth. Wouldn't we want it to be that way? Don't we long for something that isn't changing as time goes by? That I can't depend on it being the same in 10 years that it is today? Or that in some different circumstance? So anyway, I think that's an accusation, but in some ways it's kind of like the beauty of the situation. Question 6. The answer is, man may reject God's revealed truth, and that's because he's created in the image of God with free will. He can choose. He can rebel. He can close his ears. Not only can he just disobey it, I don't think Adam and Eve ever stopped believing in God or ever stopped believing in what his command said or meant. They just disobeyed. But I think another way to rebel is just to say, I don't think he's there. Or I don't think what he said is real. Right? I think some man made it. In other ways, just take God out of the picture. And that is the sense of a rejection of God or disobedience. And I can do that. God made me with the ability to do that. And here's several things. If Let no man deceive himself. If anyone among you is wise in this age, let him become a fool that he may become wise. You got to give up. You got to give up and become humble and think that you need to listen to what the revealed word said. Romans 1:24, they exchange the truth of God for a lie. Is that possible to do? Even that fundamental truth about his power and divinity. And then in verse 28, they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. I like that translation. I just don't like it. I don't have great arguments against it. I just don't like it. Now, here's an interesting point, and I put the other text in red. Does that decision to exchange the truth of God for a lie or to not retain God in my knowledge, does that have an effect on my behavior, on my moral choices? Maybe on the fate or how my life turns out or how the society I live in goes ahead? If you just nod, it would make me feel better. Mm-hmm. So which way? Yes, he's saying, look, there's a consequence here. In fact, the passage begins by saying the wrath of God is revealed. And I think that's how the wrath of God is revealed, is it has consequences in our lives and in our cultures when we do these things in ignoring God. Am I going too fast? Now I'm nervous because I'm past 8:32. Okay. All right. Point number seven is, and this is kind of important, the revealed truth from God is consistent of the same essential character and continuous with history and science and other facts that we think of as physical. I think a Christian has to believe that. When you go and talk about the resurrection or when you talk about the creation, you have to treat them with the same historical accuracy, maybe more, than the things that you see in the world and experience in the world around you, or else it's meaningless. It has no content. A revealed truth from God is consistent. Here's an interesting text. Take a look at this. That's not the one I wanted, but we'll look at it anyway. In Psalm 106 is one of the examples. David is describing the sins of the fathers under Moses, and he's saying they sinned, they committed iniquity, but he's putting that side by side with the historical facts of the Israelites. The fact that they escaped from Egypt and they made it through the Red Sea and so on. So one's history, one's morality, but they're presented really as the same content, the same kind of information. And his revealed truth is consistent with everyday experience. Now, this is it right here. So what I have here in the natural world is I have natural laws and processes, scientific processes. For example, I think it's really cool. Every night I get my phone out and I do the weather thing, right? And it's pretty accurate. I don't know how they do that. But I mean by the hour what the temperature will be and what the probability of rain. Y'all use those tools? I guess you do, right? You know predicting the weather is something men have done for years and years, right? It's interesting what Jesus said. So I can think about the natural laws and processes, but I can think about, well, the relationship with God is religious stuff. Is that different? Do I think about it differently? Do I reason with different kinds of reasoning tools and logic? The nature of God, what he wants me to do to worship him. What about how did we get here before that? And then how about the afterlife? What's going to happen there? Or in my own life, moral values, good and evil, moral law, man's value. Do I reason about things above and below this line differently, or is it the same? Look at this text from what Jesus said to the detractors, I guess you could say. He said to the multitudes, whenever you see a cloud rising out of the west, immediately you say, a shower's coming. How did they know that? Well, they've just seen it happen. That's just a law of nature. When a cloud comes in from the Mediterranean Sea, it's probably going to rain. You hope, right? And when you see the south wind blow, you say, oh, it's going to be hot weather. That wind comes up from the Negev, from the desert area, and they figured out through the years that's a natural law that it makes it hot. Hypocrites, can you not discern the face of the sky? You can discern the face of the sky and the earth, but how is it you cannot discern this time? What he was talking about was his time as the Messiah coming to Israel, a spiritual blessing. And he's saying, the same way you reason about cause and effect in the natural world, you ought to be reasoning that way about the spiritual world. I know in Bill's class last whatever day it was on miracles, you know, he was saying, he's talking about these works that Jesus did. They were intended to be a logical deduction to say, well, I guess he must have authority. He must really have come from God. It wasn't a mystical experience. It was a reasoning in the same way we reason about apples falling from trees and other natural laws that we discern. But that isn't society's view about religion, is it? The t-shirt lady illustrates that. We don't think about it in the same way we think about it in some non-logical way in which you can have a belief totally opposite from mine, but somehow we're both right, or we don't ever criticize each other. And that's not the way things work. Number nine, we're getting there, is there are other less dependable sources of knowledge that are true and useful. And here are some of them, right? There's wisdom of others, again, filtered as they accept knowledge from God. There's personal experience. I learn from my mistakes very often, but again, filtered or at least with the foundation of the fear of God to say, well, something's not working out, or maybe I just don't understand it and I trust in God to take care of things. And so this is interesting to me that when you think about science, God made the natural world and the underlying laws, the equations that make it work. That's just fun if you've studied it all. And sometimes you're just struck with how beautiful all that math is, you know, to whatever level you can understand it. But who gave us the ability to see that and measure it and work those crazy equations and come up with them in the first place? And I would say the hearing ear and the seeing eye also came from God. So our perceptive ability and the world to be perceived, they match each other, because God made them both. I think that's the idea there. And so that's really what the idea is. Whatever these sources of truth are in here, they also are governed by this belief in God as a reason to look for truth in other places. Because he made other men in his own image. And he made the world that I could see and observe. And so those are other sources of knowledge, but they're not as reliable as, you know, but they are sources of knowledge. And now I have some reason in the Christian worldview to listen to wise men and also to observe the world and learn from my own experiences. And then finally, if there's a conflict, the truth of God takes precedence over man's knowledge. So whether I figured it out or some friend of mine figured it out, if it violates what God has said, then he would take precedence. This is the beginning of Proverbs 30, which in the book of Proverbs seems like it's a yeah, but chapter. All Proverbs says, you do good, your life's going to turn out great. Chapter 30, yeah, but. There's a lot of things that are wrong in the world. A lot of things we don't understand. And he starts by saying, verse 2, I'm more brutish than any man. I have not the understanding of a man. I have not learned wisdom, neither I have knowledge of the Holy One. Why? Because I haven't been up to heaven and come back. I haven't gathered the wind. I haven't bound the waters. I haven't established the earth like God has. And who did? It's God did that. And so, and thou, add thou not to his words, lest he reprove thee, and thou be found a liar. I guess I must have taken that from the American Standard, that text. But the point is, trusting God's as precedent over the other thing. So there's the lesson right there. A couple other points I want to make, just as illustrations. I'm guessing that the t-shirt lady has some opinions about the role that men and women should have in marriage. Do you think? Like, who should do the dishwashing, right? And who should take an equal share in the kids? And who should be out, you know, earning the living? Whatever her, you think she has some opinions about that? And I suspect it's probably rooted in her own experiences, perhaps, maybe in her own childhood, maybe in friends she's seen that have, you know, seen different problems. And maybe to some extent it's governed by culture. That's her second source, her own experience, and then what the culture is telling her. Maybe in negative as well as positive ways. But let me show you how this would work in the Christian worldview. The first thing I would ask would be, how did men and women get here in the first place? And I have direct revelation about that. So that I start with that. It's my foundation. I don't really start with, I had a bad childhood and my mom was abused by my dad. I don't start there. I actually have to, that may come later, but the starting point is what I learned very objectively, propositionally about men and women. And from that, I also learned, based on that, as it turns out, and even quoting from that text, about the roles between men and women in a marriage, and the permanence of the marriage, the headship, the love, the submission, with an example of, guess what, the incarnate Christ as an example. And that's Ephesians 5. So now I'm learning more about the relationship on top of the objective truth here. And then I might go to an older woman who believes in the Bible description of things and say, how has your life been governed by God's wisdom? How's that worked out for you? Here's a practical question I have. I don't know the answer. I can't really find it in Scripture, but can you give me some advice as a faithful woman about how I could work this out? Is that a valid approach? Is the fear of God still the beginning of wisdom here? Yes. I'm going to someone who accepts those foundational truths, and then I'm asking for more lessons that they've learned. And then on top of that, I could actually have my own personal experience. My family did this or that. But you see, that's on top of all the other, not the foundation. You see the difference there? That's what I guess I'm trying to say, is how truth and knowledge would be determined. Let's do another one. How do I treat others? Man's in God's image. I know that. I don't even fully understand all of what that means, but Genesis 9 tells me it means you don't kill people. If you do, their blood calls out from the ground. That's one thing it means, because they're in the image of God. Somehow it's like killing God or something. I don't know. But that's there. It's revelation, propositional revelation. And furthermore, God's laws include that murder is punishable. Punishable by death, as a matter of fact, in the Old Testament law, Exodus 20. So I'm learning more, still direct revelation from God. And then I learned from Titus 2 that evil intent or cruelty or hatred are even wrong. And they're not compatible with this idea that man's in the image of God and ought to be treated with that same respect as something else precious that God had created. And so from that, I find my own life, living that, different ways to get along with my enemies, love them as Jesus said, but how does that work out? How do I get through problems that come from those kinds of things? But I don't start with my personal experience. I start with man in the image of God, and that's how I figure out how to treat other people. You see that? Let's do one more. How about sexual behavior? Again, to go back to the beginning, God made marriage. That's a fact. I need to appreciate that. Start with that as a foundation. And on top of that, he has governed morality. He's put some values in place with regard to sin, violation of his law. I might not agree with those, by the way, but that's what it says, that these things, homosexual and fornication, are wrong. But on the basis of the fact that he made man and woman and had a plan. And now on top of that, there's even advice about lust and license, or licentiousness is probably a better word for that. Immodesty and other things are condemned. And then from that, I have my own personal experience. I notice what tempts me. I notice what tempts other people. I've seen men make bad mistakes, women too. And I see what's created the temptation in their lives. And I learn from that. You see that. You see, that's a different approach to establishing truth and knowledge, I think, than we would expect to find in the common culture. And I hate to keep bashing the T-shirt lady, but we made her up, so we'll just bash her all we want to. But you see the difference. I hope you can see that in this. All right. Okay, I'm done. I'm just going to summarize right quick with fewer points. The T-shirt lady would start with what she experiences. She might add to that what she learns from others. And then she might even listen to culture or maybe even some religious traditions if they had some value and don't violate these other things in her life. But here's what the Bible says. First, God's the source and repository of absolute truth. Man can obtain truth directly from God in as much as he reveals it. There are a lot of things I wish he had explained that he hasn't, but he didn't. But I can understand the things that have been revealed if he's revealed it. And so truth then can be found in many ways. First, important, propositionally revealed from God. Second, my own personal experience and from other men, right? Those are other ways, but they're less perfect. Man's limited perception produced an imperfect knowledge, meaning an imperfect in several ways, incomplete for sure, but also wrong in a lot of areas. And 100 years from now, we will probably be laughing at the things that we think, even about physical laws that we think today. And I hope it's the case that we'll look at cancer treatments and say, they did what to people who had cancer? And we'll have a much better approach to that. But it's limited and it's imperfect and subject to change. So the order of precedence is this. God's revealed truth. I think learning from reliable others, that's what Proverbs says wisdom is. It's open ears, not open mouth, right? It's not expressing your opinion. It's being open to the opinion of others and anxious to learn and be rebuked and reproved and enjoying that and needing it to grow. And finally, my own personal observation, who when I go to the ant and learn about diligence, or I go past the field of the fool who's just been lazy and his field and his vineyard are overgrown and so on. So that's it. I'd like to open for any comments about this. I feel like I've, as always, gotten behind and just went into a monologue. So.
The power guy called you back? No, the power guy is back. Drove up
here. Oh. Yeah, I unmuted everybody. That's probably a dangerous thing to do, but I'm open for discussion.
So I keep thinking about Job using his personal experiences in what's going on in his life to make a judgment about what God is doing and maybe should not be doing to him, at least the way which he perceives it. And then God's answer is, who is this who darkens counsel without words of knowledge or without wisdom? So it's all predicated on what God gives you to have knowledge. And basis of personal experience and what's going on around you, create additional knowledge in you if it does not agree with what God has already given.
Do you get that out of fire?
Yeah. So, actually, I think I did put Job 36 as just a whole chapter to think about in light of this, right? After all this, you know, arguing and haggling and everything that Job and his friends have done and pontificating,
right. And
God just finally says, you know, this is silly. Stop talking. And there is a place for that. I think that's the starting point. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. That's the way we should begin. And then starting very humbly from there, I think we gingerly, tentatively go look for other wise sources of wisdom that are based on faith in God. Good point. Other comments?
Marty, I guess, you know, when you're talking, I think about observation of the physical world a few slides up. I mean, and then, you know, you're quoting from, you know, the people in the days of Jesus were seeing those miracles. I mean, we don't have that same ability to observe because we're not in that time of Jesus. So there is a certain level, I guess, of observation as far as direct. I mean, science cannot observe God or the spiritual thing. And those that lived in the time of Jesus were a very special time because they were able to observe him showing that he had authority, that he was from God. And so, I mean, I get, you know, I feel there is some difference there from that passage you were taking with Jesus. Of course, now it is we go through and say, you know, we look and we observe the New Testament, how it came, and how it came to us, and we observe that and come and say, yes, these are reliable witnesses that we need to listen to them. But again, there is a little difference because in the time of Jesus, they were able to observe physical laws being broken.
So, yeah, I'm tempted to say a lot more, but in fact, the Bill's class on miracles made me think about that. But yes, there's an inserted step, which is the reliability of the historical record. You got to put that in there. My point is not so much whether we saw miracles or not, but rather we do the same mental deduction about those miracles that they had to do, right? Insert a step about whether it's reliable record or not. That's true. You got to work your way through that. But once you do, I'm still making the same deduction, right? The wind is coming from the south. This violated a physical law. And I know what the conclusion in both of those is. And the logic that I follow on that is just it's the same. As opposed to, you have to almost see that in contrast to a lot of religious experiences that I just prayed really hard and God whacked me upside of the head all of a sudden. And I knew that it was right or wrong. That's not the same mental deduction process, right? Put a transmission problem in the middle. That's okay. That's right. But the deduction process is the same as even looking at the weather. That's the point I was trying to make. And you almost have to see that in contrast to kind of the modern view that religion is in the realm of non-logical. It's just non-logical. Don't expect anything but a feeling at best. And it's not propositional. I can't explain the feeling to you, but I have, as Loretta said wisely, I have a spirituality about me. I don't even know what that means, right? But if I'm feeling stressed, I go into that spirituality world. And that's why I think, I don't need to get into it, but Schaefer mentions that, you know, drugs do the same thing. Wild pornography does the same thing. A lot of things will help us, you know, escape what we think of as just being trapped in a meaningless physical world, right? And so sometimes we'll leap into irrationality or other things as a way of escaping. Or maybe finding freedom, which we don't really believe in if we're trapped in this natural world. Yeah, Danny.
Yeah, so I know the T-shirt lady is kind of a, I know we can easily put her way out there and say we could never be guilty of being like her. But I think the inherent danger is that we can use our own experience to then begin to rationalize and make judgments about our understanding of truth as it's been revealed to us. We might begin to question the things that we've been taught or the things that we've come to understand as truth to be affected. And then we began to say, well, maybe I just didn't really know the truth as clearly now that I've experienced this tragedy or this in my life, or I've got an adult child that is in an unlawful marriage. Does that mean my view of marriage now changes as I work to reconcile that relationship? And so that begins to affect how I understand truth by those experiences. I think that's the danger here.
That's an excellent application. I mean, don't you see that here in this picture here? And that is my religious dogma gets suppressed because of my own personal experience. I just can't believe God would condemn. I can get all kind of thinking about that. The Christian worldview is to me a pretty airtight logical approach to how truth and knowledge can be known. And it doesn't mean we'll learn everything we wish we knew, but at least it gives me some order of precedent for doing that. That's a real good point.